Hi, you're listening to a podcast brought to you by the teaching team at New Life in North Lincolnshire. New Life is committed to helping transform people and transform places through the love and power of Jesus Christ. We hope you, in some small way, will be blessed and transformed by this message.
Hello, everybody. Nailed it. Right. I'm going to be honest, Dan triggered me then, he full-named me. It just threw me back to when my mum tells me off of Jake Brown, get here now, and I was just a bit, I need a breather after that. How's everyone doing? Have we all had a nice summer? Yeah. Parents, where are you? Have you had a nice summer? I'm looking at your faces to see if it's been great or awful. Rob is giving me an interesting look at the back. It says a lot, it says a lot. I work in education, so I've had a wonderful summer. I've had a blissful 5 weeks off now of definitely working hard and doing stuff. But I go back on Friday, so feel bad for me. I have to look after 142 kids, maybe? I don't know, like a lot of children. And so I realized people struggle with one child, and I've decided to go for over 100, which... Choices were made. Quick question. How many people like setting goals? Just give me a wave. Who are goal-orientated people? Okay, I see. Lovely. That is me. If I don't have a goal, I get lost, I get confused, and I get really awkward. And I had a goal last year of I wanted to try and make some new friends, which is awkward for me. Like, it's really difficult because I'm a big-time introvert, and I'm socially awkward on a good day, let alone, like, on a day when I'm feeling nervous and on edge. So I decided I'm going to try my best. I need to branch out. I need to try and make some new friends. I looked around at work, and I thought, who is, like, my age? Who do I think I could gel with? And I had three people lined up that I thought, you know what? This will go well. Yes. So the first person I picked, I was like, oh, he's a good lad. He's a good guy. We get on well. We work together well. And then as I'm chatting and I'm getting to know him, he is a sports guy, and I am not. Now to put it into perspective of how not a sports guy I am, do you know like when you throw a ball to a dog and it just looks at you? That's me with sports. It was just one of them. I was like, it's good. You're a great guy. It's just not going to work. You're going to want to go to football, rugby, cricket, and I'm going to hate it. So we will stay as workmates. You know, he's that type of friend of I can trust to look after my dog. I can't go out for coffee with him. So it's that's how I've broken everyone down in my life. It's really easy and straightforward. The next person. I thought, okay, it'll get better. I wanted to get more cultured this year. So I wanted to like go to art museums and just like take cool photos and be like, look at me, I'm learning, I'm looking cool. And so I just thought, this person knows loads about that sort of stuff. And I thought, this would be great, you know, we'll get on really well. And I was just like, you know, nonchalantly said, oh, why don't we just go and just hang out and have some fun time? It'd be great. And she threw out the card, oh no, I have a boyfriend. And I was like, oh, no, that's not what this was. And now I'm embarrassed, and my face has gone red, and you don't believe that I didn't fancy you, but, like, it's... It was one of them. I was like, okay, we're going to stay as workmates. That's fine. No, don't worry about that one. And then I had one more friend that I thought, you know what, we jam, and we get on, we tick a lot of boxes, you know, we've got a lot more similarities. And so I was like, hey, let's go hang out. And it's like, yeah, sure. So perfect, great. Man, I was stressed. I was so stressed because I was like, I'm not good at socializing. I'm not good at talking to new people. And I had to pep talk myself. Like, Jake, you cannot afford to mess this up because you don't have many friends. And so if you mess this up, you've got no one else. So I put a lot of pressure on myself on that day. And I was freaking out. I was stressing because I was like, oh, my gosh, we're going to Cleethorpes. I didn't want to go to Cleethorpes. That sounds like a date. Have I been hustled into a date and I don't know it? And then I was thinking, what if this goes wrong? What if this is, like, just really awkward and just... she just thinks I'm a weirdo, and like, because I am a weirdo, but like, do you know like when you got first impressions, you're just like, be yourself, but be your normal self, like, because my weird self is just weird, and I didn't want that. So this is my brain, right? This is what everything that's going on in my mind, and And I'm just like, I'm nervous. I'm like having like, not panic attacks, but it's an undercurrent of nerves. It's just like, and the ridiculous thing is it's the most normal day in the world. And like, it was a lovely day. We went to the beach and played arcades and it was a wonderful, wholesome time. And we became friends. It was like my dream. It was my dream day. But man, I was exhausted. I was so exhausted because I was like, oh my gosh, no. I had to do the equivalent of a flop of you go home, you just, and just don't talk to me for 3 days because I'm a heavy introvert. That's like, anyone else an introvert? I mean, it's a silly question. An introvert won't put their hand up. Like, But you know what I learned from this experience? Talking to adults is hard. Making friends as an adult is hard. Because at school, it's easy. At university, it's pretty easy. Like, in the adult world, it's weird. Like, you ask someone to hang out, and it's a thing of, what do you want? So, why? And so, I've learned it's hard, and that's what we're talking about today, in the sense of not making friends, but talking to people about Jesus. So, as Dan said, we are in the book of Colossians, and so if you've not been here, that's cool. It's summer holidays, you're allowed to have time off. But a quick, like, the speed run of a recap is we've had 3 weeks so far. The first week, the main point was all about Jesus. No matter what's going on in life, no matter good times, bad times, confusing times, it's all about Jesus. Week two was all about keeping the main thing the main thing. And so we can get lost and confused in life, but make sure we keep the things that are important to Jesus, to us, the main thing. And then the last week, Tim was talking all about great virtues and values and putting on the right clothes, the right character, the right Jesus-y character of how we should be. And now we're at the last part of Colossians, which is great because it's four verses that we've got to go through. So it's really easy and really quick. But what I've learned is when you're writing a letter or if when you are talking to people, the last thing you say tends to be the most important. In terms of if it's affection, the last word you say, I love you. If it's like going to the groceries, you shout the most important thing that you need to get, which is toilet roll. It's the last thing is always the most important. And this is what Paul says, and it will come up on the screen for you as Paul's final words in Colossians. So, devote yourselves to prayer. Be watchful and thankful, and pray for us too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mysteries of Christ for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly as I should. Be wise in the ways you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversations be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. I find passages like that awkward for introvert me, because the most important thing for Paul is, all right, we've talked about all these things. We've talked about all this stuff, but the most important thing I want you to remember is to go out and tell people about Jesus. Cool. Yeah. No problem. That's our jam. Like, I'll be honest, like, most of us, we probably don't wake up in the morning being adamant to talk to people about Jesus. It's like, I'm ready, I'm hyped, let's go. I'm going to talk to every single person I meet today about Jesus. It probably doesn't happen. Like, we probably don't wake up every morning praying and thinking, Jesus, I'm desperate for someone to talk to me about Jesus today, to have an opportunity to talk about my faith. To be honest, it's probably quite awkward, like, to say, hey, I'm a Christian, yeah, I go to church, and like, I put my hands up in worship, I pray, I sing songs, I believe in miracles. Sometimes that can be really awkward when you tell that to people who aren't in this room. It's all right in this room because we get it. Like, we are part of the Christian team. We've got the T-shirt. But when we're out there in our day-to-day, our normal lives, that stuff can be really uncomfortable and awkward because people have their spiritual baggage when it comes to Christians. And instantly, you get put on a label of what their experience has been like when they've interacted with Jesus, interacted with Christians. And for me this year, I've had an interesting year of, I've probably spent a lot less time in a Christian bubble. Like, my background is that I went to Bible college and spent 3 years at Mattersea, and which is a Christian Bible college, and then post that I decided to do a master's in theology. And so I've been in the Christian circle for a long time. Like, I know the ins and outs of how we do the church stuff. And so I've gone from that to working in a Christian school, which is really cool and I enjoy it. But very often you don't see much of the Christian stuff. And my day-to-day, my interactions with people is very different. And so these are the people I probably spend my time with this year, which are Muslims, people who are spiritualists, Jehovah's Witnesses, atheists, people from different cultures, people who are gay, people who have had traumatic events, people who are from middle class, from the lower class, people who are from traumatic backgrounds. And then there's me. Hello. It's awkward. It's like it's a very different environment from singing our praises about Jesus and from loving and having those prayer times back in Bible college. It's a very different time. And all that stuff, that's just the staff. The kids are a whole different story, I can tell you for now. My job is often I spend time just working with them just pastorally. And so we get a whole heap of stuff. But it got me thinking, right? If that is my day-to-day in a school in the heart of Scunthorpe, then most of us would probably have something similar. It may not be that specific list, but there's definitely probably one or two of those things that you resonate with and think, ooh, I know what that's like. And so we gotta learn how to talk to people. We gotta learn how to talk to our community, because this is Scunthorpe. This is who we work with, this is who we do life with. And so it matters. It really matters. And because Paul said it's the most important thing is to go and tell people about Jesus. Go and reach your community about Jesus. That's the same for us. So how do we do that? That's the question. But don't worry, I've got some stuff written down, and so we'll try and figure it out together. Before we start, let me just pray for us all. So just bow your heads and we'll just take this little time to process some stuff. So Jesus, I pray that we as a community, we will just have hearts to hear what you want to say today. That we will be open to reaching the people in our world, to speaking your life, your truth and your goodness to this world that so desperately needs you. In your name, amen. Cool. So today is going to be easy. There's going to be 2 points. And normally people have 3, but I've only got 2, so it's going to be slightly quicker. So you won't need to worry about that. And so the first point is dead, dead simple. Be wise. Be wise. Be wise in the way that you act towards outsiders. That's what Paul said. I feel like sometimes we feel as though being wise means that we've got to be really knowledgeable. We've got to be really clever people. We've got to be the bigwigs, those that know all the stuff. And sometimes that feels like we need to just be so engrossed in the Bible that we need to know every intrinsic detail, because then that way we are wise and we're clever and we can handle anything that we're thrown our way. But if, from my experience, people aren't bothered about that stuff. Like, in terms of, in the nicest way, it is like someone's trying to sell you a house and they are bragging about the foundations of the house. Most people don't care about that. They're not bothered by it. I don't even know what good foundations are, but it's 10-foot foundations. Ooh, that's really no one says that. But people are interested in the decorations, the visuals, the experience of what would it be like to live here. And I feel like that is the same in terms of how we navigate it with people, of being wise. Because sometimes it can be easy to get caught up in our Christianese, in our bit of our biblical languages, of getting caught up in our theology, our intrinsic details of the Old Testament, our soteriology, our Christology, and all the big fancy words that just go over our heads. I did an experiment these past month to see just how interesting theology was for people. So I've been reading a book called Old Testament Theology, and I've been enjoying it, and I've whittled it down to about 10 people, all people from all different backgrounds, that just said, just to say, oh, I'm learning about this cool stuff. It's cool and exciting. I'm learning about the different names of God in the Old Testament, which is really cool and exciting. And do you know who was interested? 2 people. 2 out of 10. Dan's a little disappointed. He's there on the front. He's just like, oh my gosh, I want to know what he thinks. Like, because, and you know those two people? They were my Bible college friends. They were the only people that asked me questions about it. My mom, bless her soul, she is a wonderful Christian lady, and she does her best to entertain my rambles and nonsense of excitement of the Old Testament. And she's like, cool, yeah, that's great. Like, my favorite was, like, I spoke to my non-Christian friends, and they're just like, oh no. Please, no, Jake, don't do this to us. Please. Look, people aren't interested in the foundations. Like, don't get me wrong, foundations are important. We need foundations. But it's not what people are looking for, you know? And this is the problem with all this stuff is this is stuff that we're meant to care about. You know what I mean? These are the things that are important to us. So how on earth is someone who doesn't know anything about the Bible, who's got no clue about the story of Jesus, meant to get enticed by those sort of things? A thing I've learned this year is I spent a long time working with young people, and almost like 5 days of the week I'm there just chatting, and usually sometimes I get an opportunity to talk about Jesus stuff, which is cool and great, and I always love that privilege. And I remember there was times on a Friday night when I'd be able to do a talk to our young people, and there'd be an announcement of, oh, Jake is preaching tonight, it's going to be really good and all that stuff. And bless their hearts, I'd have some that would sheepishly come up to me and be like, Jake, what's a preach? What's a preach, Jake? I have no idea. And so then I would have to explain, and then just say, oh, no, it's just a big fancy word for talking. And then I would tell them stories about Jesus and tell them the cool, exciting things about the Bible. And the honest answer, and what I love about working with kids and young people, is they are always honest. If they like what you're saying, they'll tell you. If they're bored, they will tell you. If they think you're annoying, they will tell you. Adults are way more polite. They just sit there and nod and like, yes, very good. And then they'll talk about it later. But this is what I've learned. Like, when I was telling the stories about Jesus, it would just gloss over their heads. They couldn't grasp it. They couldn't understand it because for them, it was just a story. It was something that didn't quite grip them. So I had to change tactics. I had to think about, how do I talk to people about Jesus? How do I talk to young people about Jesus? And so I shifted from telling the Jesus stories, but rather telling stories in my world about Jesus. Does that make sense? Front row, got it. Perfect. But so what would that look like? I mean, sometimes I would just sit and I would tell them my story about how I became a Christian. Sometimes that would be telling us stories about how God has helped me through my anxieties and helping me get through my struggles of just even just getting out of the house with anxiety. Sometimes it would just be talking about how God has provided financially for me. Sometimes it would just be like coincidences that I've had when I prayed about something and then it turns out it happened. That's really coincidental, but not really coincidental. But those were the things that gripped the young people. Those are the things that caught their eye, caught their attention, because they weren't chasing truth, they were chasing hope. They weren't looking for the answer of truth, but they needed hope. And the struggle and challenge we have these days is we know that hope is a person, but people don't know that person. People don't know who Jesus is, and we've been conditioned not to trust strangers. We've been conditioned to not trust people and even just what they say. We need to be able to just show Jesus through our words and actions. And so this is the problem that I found, and the struggle is that the stories of Jesus is great and powerful, and we know how great they are because when you know it, you know it. But if you don't know, it's just a story. It's a cute story you tell kids. And so, like, words are important. But we need to show people who Jesus is. Because people are trying to figure out whether they want to be like you rather than chasing truth. People are figuring out whether they want to do life with you rather than doing life with Jesus. So is your life interesting? Is your life attractive? Is your life something that draws people in? Do people want to be like you? Do people want to draw near to you? Do people want to do life? Like, sometimes we got to do the normal. We got to be normal. Like, Christians sometimes have a reputation of just being weird and just doing strange stuff without explanations. Yes, I am a Christian. I am someone that loves Jesus passionately, but there is more to me than that. Jesus is the center of my world, so don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that it's, like, segregated. No, but, like, I love Jesus, but I also love reading. I also love Star Wars. Any Star Wars fans? We're going to talk about Ahsoka later. It was a great time. Oh, my goodness. I love anime. No one likes anime in this room. Like, unless... No. Oh, that's Jess. Jessica. Perfect. I love those things. I love going to the gym. I love doing stuff. I have a normal life. And what I love and my favorite compliment of this year has been that people are confused that I'm a Christian. In the sense of, you don't meet my stereotype of how I perceived you to be. I expected you to be this way, but you do all these other normal, regular things. You have a life. And that has been the thing that's opened the door for so many, of just being me. Being me, as important as all this other stuff is, to open the door, to get people to meet with Jesus, we've got to be able to show him his character. Because people need to see Jesus' character before they're going to be interested in what he has to say. And that was true in Jesus' day. Like, even just check out the original disciples. They were all people doing normal life. Jesus comes in, does in a normal way, but does have a wow moment with them. Whether that is through some miraculous thing or through miraculous acceptance, they are stunned by his character and his ways, and then they choose to go and follow him. The more we walk with people and do the normal stuff, the more open they will be to asking questions. And I say that, and I mean their questions. Sometimes we're very good at, like, we like to talk about what we want to talk about. Have you ever met somebody like that? That just wants to always talk about their interests and what that is important to them? No, we, as Christians, we got to meet people where they're at. We got to meet people with what they are wrestling with and what they need answers for. And so, over this past year, this is some of the questions, some situations I've had to navigate this year. And it's some things like this. What does God say about the Muslim faith? What do you think happened to my loved one that passed away? What do you think God says about LGBTQ+? What do you think about the beliefs of the Jehovah's Witnesses? Do you think God can heal cancer? What does God say about mental health? How can God exist when all these horrible things have happened? Those are some big questions. Some of those questions where it's like, you're praying, Jesus, take me now. Gosh, I don't want to deal with that. Oh, gosh, no. But that's real, though. Those are people's real questions. That's people's real lives. And I have the caveat, right, of, I have a master's degree in theology and biblical studies, and so I had to put that on my CV, you know, so people know. And when they ask me, what do you do at university? Like, that's my caveat. So maybe I get these questions because they think I know the answer. I don't know. But through doing life with people, it opens the doors to questions. And through doing these things, it matters. And so that's why, even though, the foundations aren't what are attractive, that's why we need the foundations. Because those are big things to wrestle with. Big tensions that can actually be a little bit gray and a little uncertain. That's why we need our small groups. That's why we need our Christian friends. That's why we need our huddle, our tribe, to wrestle through those things so that we can show Jesus in the best way possible to our world out there. I've been reading a book about chaplaincy recently, and it's been great. I've loved it, because I figured I would do a lot of pastoral work. I figured it might as well be useful. And I learned something really interesting about army chaplains is, for starters, they're not allowed to have a weapon, which I didn't know that. But they are always with their troop, always with their tribe, and always with their squad through thick and thin. The reason being is because a chaplain outside of the army could never relate to what's going on in the army. They would never be able to relate to the ethical dilemmas and the tensions of what they have to deal with. And the guy that was telling his story and just giving advice about chaplaincy, he was saying that, pretty much everyone on his squad will eventually come and speak to him, regardless of their faith, regardless of their situation or beliefs. And he said this, and I love this quote that he said, is the love of a chaplain is way more important than the faith and theology. Let me change it. The love of a Christian is way more important than the faith and theology. So how do we be wise? We love people. We do life with people. As great as churches and these walls are, our mantra is here, there, and everywhere. We've got to be everywhere as well. We've got to be with the people that are in our everywhere sphere. So who do you need to spend some more time with? Okay, point two. Be grace-filled. Let your conversations be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Be grace-filled. My friend, who I went to the Cleef Forks with, told me a story about her interactions with Christians. And she was down in London one time, roughly around Easter Sunday. And like, she was going, doing a thing, going to an event. It was a fun time. And she met a Christian, one of the ones that's on the streets. And he didn't like her. And so he said the words of this, of, "You are a harlot who sleeps with dogs." Oof. Now, I'm glad I wasn't there. This would have gone two ways. Way one, which is probably the more Christian way, is I would have flexed and cashed in my theology degree and be like, "Excuse me, sir, do you know what you're talking about?" Option two, it would have been a prayer of, "Jesus, look away, it's about to get nasty." Like, oh my goodness. Like, a harlot who sleeps with dogs. You don't say that to somebody. Practical advice, never say that to anybody, okay? Write that one down in case you're not sure. You never say that to someone. But that is her impression, her experience with Christians. People who are judgmental, people who are hurtful, people who are unkind. We need to be known for our grace, not our salt. Salt, in a practical sense, for a meal, brings out flavor, you know? But how many people just throw the whole pot on there? Nobody. But sometimes we can do that with the relationships that we have with people, is that it's rather than having a season of salt, we dump everything on them, which is dangerous. It's dangerous, and relationships and friendships can be ruined with that. And so we need to make sure we are grace-filled. So but what does that mean? What does that mean? Grace is a weird word, and for many years it confused me. And so my simple understanding of grace is giving the gift, whatever that looks like, whether that's kindness, money, literally a gift, mercy, forgiveness to somebody. Grace in a nutshell. Like, if you want to know more, ask Mark. He's done a PhD on it. But the challenge for us today, right, if you was to talk to someone that wasn't a Christian, and they would say, what are the characteristics of a Christian? Grace probably would not be one of them. Judgmental, probably. Cynical, I don't know. But like, whenever I talk to people about church who are not in a church background, sometimes the phrase is, why would I want to go to church? I feel bad enough as it is. We got a reputation, sadly, it's not a good one. And I know half of that isn't our fault, and sometimes I'm preaching to the choir here, but like, we got to make sure we got to try and change that in people. That the phrase and labels that we've been stigmatized with as a community of believers, that it be actually one of love, one of grace, one of beauty, rather than the judgment. And I've been trying to think, like, why are we known for being judgmental? Why do we struggle with grace? Like, maybe it is because we're tolerant of certain sins, that because of certain experiences we've had in our own lives, we're okay with certain messes and problems, so we can understand that. But then there's other aspects that we wouldn't touch nowhere near, so then we struggle with that. Possibly it's because of different worldviews, different perspectives, different ways of thinking that we struggle with, that this is our way of thinking, and if someone brings in a different thought, we struggle with that. I remember hearing a story about a Christian who was trying to tell an indigenous tribe about the story of Jesus and his betrayal by Judas, and the tribe thought Judas was the hero, he was the savior in the story because of what he did was right. I don't know where you go with that one, but this is the thing. This is like sometimes there's real challenges of why we struggle with grace. But I feel like the real reason, probably the thing that we struggle with the most, is that grace is paying the cost so that the other person doesn't have to. And that's hard. Parents, when a child breaks something that was incredibly expensive, paying the cost is hard, right? if you're in a relationship or have someone that you're really close to and they damage your friendship or relationship and you having to forgive them, paying the cost for that is hard. But it's what we're called to do. That's Jesus' kind of grace. See, I love the story of the prodigal son, the kid who defames, dishonors, is disrespectful to his dad, takes all his money, shames him in front of his entire community, goes off to do wild living, destroying his soul, comes back, all begging for forgiveness, super apologetic, and all the father does is hug him. There's no scolding. There's no, you need to do better. There's no, I can't believe you did this. You have dishonored the family. All there is love, acceptance, and a celebration that he's home. That is God's grace in a nutshell. And it's beautiful. And part of me loves that. And I think probably why we struggle with grace is maybe because we've forgotten God's grace for us. That maybe we've just forgotten how good God has been to us. Sometimes I think that if Jesus behaved how we behaved, oh man, we'd be in trouble. Like if Jesus had the grace that sometimes we can have for other people, it would be like I'd have to earn his forgiveness. I'd have to earn my repentance. I'd have to earn my salvation. I'd never be able to do it. Like if Jesus had to wait for me to sort my life out, then I'm in the club, I'm never getting in. Like, what I love about Jesus is that my worst and darkest moment in the bits of my life that I would never say on a platform, Jesus said, he is worthy. I will pay the price. I will sacrifice my life so that he can live in freedom and in relationship with God. And that's the same for me and the same for you. And I love it. It's a grace that is so beautiful. And the danger is that when we don't show that grace to other people, we end up saying to them that Jesus' death, his sacrifice, his forgiveness, his healing, everything that is good about Jesus is good enough for me, but it's not for them. That it's okay for these types of people, but it's not for them. And that's so dangerous. That's the opposite of what Jesus is. So how do we tell the world about Jesus? How do we show the world about Jesus? We show them grace. We pay the cost so that they don't have to. And that's hard. It's really hard. It means that we love people, whether they praise Jesus or Allah or anyone in between. We love them. Regardless of their sexual orientation, we love them. Regardless of whether we agree with their life choices or whether or not they sin differently to me and you, we love them. And that is sometimes hard. Because it's choosing to accept someone as they are and still choosing to be in relationship with them, regardless of whether they change or don't. It's saying, regardless of where you're going, I'm coming with you. Whatever that looks like, I'm in. And I'm mindful, I'll be honest, I'm mindful of that last paragraph. It's an awkward one. Probably maybe made you feel uncomfortable a bit. I've been there. Some days I'm still there. Okay? But it's probably how the disciples felt when Jesus said things like, the Samaritans are welcome. When Matthew, the tax collector, the traitor to Israel, he's one of us now. To the eunuch who is now accepted and able to worship in the temple. To the woman that is caught in adultery, Jesus says, all right, if you've never sinned, you throw a rock. I bet that made them uncomfortable. Because it wasn't what their thoughts were. It wasn't how they felt. It wasn't what they was looking for. And that, for me, brings me right back to the start of this talk. Verse 2. Devote yourself to prayer. Because this stuff is big. This stuff is difficult. This stuff is sometimes messy. And we cannot do it in our own strength. We really cannot. There are so many complexities. Every person is unique. Every person has their own journey, their own story. And I am not the be-all and end-all to change people's lives. My best day, my best self, fails in comparison to God's goodness. And He is the one that everyone needs, not me. We need His grace. We need His love. We need His acceptance to be the thing that shines through everything that we say and do. Otherwise, it's pointless. It truly is. Hey, I'm conscious of time, so I'm going to slowly wrap up. But let me give you a practical thing with this. In terms of every day when I go to work, I do a prayer for all the things that I get up to. And it's simply this of, let me be your hands and feet, Jesus. Let my words be your words. Let my eyes be your eyes. Help me see what you see. And help my heart be your heart. Why don't you just bow your heads? Just so we can just reflect on some things that we've talked about today. People, they matter. They're the most important thing to Jesus, to God. And as great as Sunday is, there is more to life than this 2-hour window that we have. There is a world outside that is desperate for Jesus. People don't care what you know until they know how much you care. Create opportunities by being Jesus to people. Meet their need. Treat people like people, not a project. Be a friend to someone in need. Be gracious. My simple question is, how grace-filled are you today? What's leaking out of your life? Is it love, mercy, forgiveness, or some other stuff? Is it the grace and love of Jesus? Let us not be filled with judgment, but compassion for a world around us that so desperately needs it. People need hope. People need love. People need to feel accepted. And we love people because He first loved us. May we never forget God's goodness to our lives. And so that's today. That's it. It's a simple task, but my goodness, it's a difficult one. So my prayer for this season is that love may be the thing that leaks out of us. That as we draw this series to a close, that is what people see. So maybe we've got some homework, some projects that we've got to work on. Maybe that might mean we need to be bold and tell people that we are a Christian. Take the first step. So if we need to be bold, let us be bold. Sometimes that might mean we need to listen to people's struggles, so let us do that. Let us be sensitive to our world around us and meet the needs of others, because it's only when people feel seen, loved, and cared for that they're willing to find out why you are the way that you are. So I'm going to pray. And what will happen is I will let you decide what that looks like. Maybe you need to wrestle with some of these things. That's okay. Some of these things are gray. And it's important to wrestle with truth. And what that looks like for you, maybe that is sitting, meditating. Maybe that's standing and praising. Maybe that's coming to the front, asking for prayer. Maybe that's just talking to someone about it. I don't know what that is for you, for your interaction with God right now. But do what you need to do. So I'm just going to pray. The band will be playing in the background, and then Dan will come back up in a sec. So Jesus, I pray and thank you that you are good. That your grace and your love is incredible and a gift that we never deserved. And I pray, God, that simply we can show that to our people. Help us be wise in how we speak and how we interact with people. Help us be wise in living life and doing the normal things with people. Help us find our troops. Help us love on people. And I pray, Jesus, that we show more grace than salt in our world, that actually your love and forgiveness is the thing that overflows in everything that we say and do. So Jesus, do what you need to do in us today, this week, this month, this year, however long it takes, to help us see more of you in our world. In your name, amen.
Thanks for listening to this message from New Life in North Lincolnshire. To find out more, do visit us online at newlifechurch.uk, or why not pay us a visit? We'd love to see you.